Daly, Julie Crosby, Hugh Grant, Jessica Lee, John Wallach, Vesta Goddard, and Dennis Moynihan. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks for joining us.
Tune in Saturday, June 28th for a live broadcast from Good in the Hood. KBOO will broadcast the entertainment from Lillis Albina Park from 2 to 7 p.m. Tune in to hear what's good in the hood Saturday, June 28th from 2 to 7 p.m. here on your community radio station, KBOO Portland.
This is Mary Graham. My husband, Donnie Graham, after being down 20 years in prison, was shot and killed by the Clackamas County Sheriff. My four beautiful daughters were taken by the state. I turned to drugs to ease the pain. Listen to my story of healing and hope on Prison Pipeline.
That's Prison Pipeline, June 30th at 6:30 p.m.
The time is now 5:01 p.m. This is KBOO Portland. Coming up next is the KBOO Evening News, made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from stateconstituents.us, committed to empowering people of every state by providing the complete text and audio of their state constitutions. Those seeking to hold state governments accountable can learn more at stateconstitutions.us. Right now, the KBOO Evening News.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News, veterans weigh in on the next moves for the U.S. in Iraq.
The construction firm building Google's new data center in the Dalles is hit with fines for violating labor laws.
And more news on the marijuana legislation initiative on the Oregon ballot this fall.
Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Friday, June 27th, 2014. I'm Theo Burke.
And I'm Liam Delta. A ballot initiative to legalize marijuana in the state of Oregon has handed in close to double the number of signatures needed to qualify for the November ballot. A second initiative to legalize marijuana faced labor issues over the last several weeks and was unable to qualify. Anthony Johnson, with the qualifying measure, spoke with KBOO's Terry Eaton about the initiative campaign.
Anthony, go ahead and tell us the status.
Yes, today we turned in more than 145,000 signatures to the Secretary of State's office. We are confident we will be on the ballot this November. We are so excited to give Oregon the opportunity to now regulate marijuana like beer and wine and better prioritize law enforcement resources and generate revenue for the state instead of treating marijuana use like crime.
How many do you need to have verified?
Yeah, the Secretary of State will now verify the signatures, and we need 87,213 signatures to be valid. And with our 145,000 total, we are confident we will meet that mark.
Okay, so it sounds like you're pretty excited about the expectation that this will be on the ballot in November.
Yes, we are very excited to be on the ballot this November. We're confident to be on the ballot, and we are so happy that poll after poll demonstrates that Oregonians are ready to regulate marijuana like beer and wine instead of treating it both just like a drug.
Having gotten it on the ballot, are you anticipating any more barriers to getting this passed?
So we will be, fighting for every vote, and we will be registering voters all across the state. We'll be doing all that we can to get our message across to every single voter all across Oregon.
Any further information people need to know to be looking for this on ballot in November?
There's no measure number yet. So we'll be awaiting a measure number. In the meantime, people can check us out at newapproachoregon.com, read the measures, sign up to volunteer, sign up as a supporter, and hopefully they contribute to the cause. We're really excited to have Oregonians consider this important measure that can really change the lives of thousands of Oregonians and really improve our state by better prioritizing law enforcement resources and generating much-needed revenue for education, public safety, and mental health and substance abuse treatment. So please check us out at newapproachoregon.com.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Have a good day.
This is Terry Eaton for KBOO News.
Just weeks after a two-year-old was severely injured when a SWAT team threw a flash grenade in his crib, a new report has been released detailing the excessive use of SWAT teams by local police departments. The report is called War Comes Home, The Excessive Militarization of American Policing. It was published by the American Civil Liberties Union. The organization conducted a year-long study looking at 800 instances in which special weapons and tactics teams, or SWAT teams, carried out arrests or search raids. Originally, these teams were created to be deployed during hostage situations or when active shooters were present. But their use rapidly expanded, and now SWAT teams are used to serve no-knock warrants and carry out drug raids when they suspect guns may be present. The guns in question are, in most cases, legally purchased. SWAT team interventions have resulted in the deaths of numerous innocent people, including toddlers, veterans, pregnant women, and unarmed senior citizens. The report found that in 72% of the cases, the SWAT team shows up to serve a warrant with over 20 officers in full gear. The report calls on law enforcement agencies to set stricter guidelines on when and how SWAT teams should be deployed.
The Washington County Sheriff's Office will take over all duties and functions of the Cornelius Police Department on July 1st of this year. At that time, the City Council will officially dissolve the Cornelius Police Department. Cornelius, a small town of 12,000 people located just west of Hillsborough in Washington County, has had the city police department has been plagued with problems. Allegations of police corruption, a police chief retiring under investigation, officers testifying against each other as to officer credibility, and numerous lawsuits filed by the police officers against the city were just a few of the problems that the police department had been faced with in the recent past. The city council reached the conclusion that reforming the department would be too costly and controversial. So they decided to contract with the Washington County Sheriff's Office to take over all law enforcement duties for the city. The city of Cornelius will pay the Washington County Sheriff's Office $2.4 million for police services for the first year, with annual increases expected. Cornelius City Council has said that the city will see a savings of $100,000 within the next few years.
Today, Oregon U.S. Senator Ron Wyden called on President Obama to release more details of its drone program. In a letter to White House counsel Neil Eggleston, Senator Wyden and two other senators demanded to know how U.S. citizens can be targeted when they are outside of previously asserted war zones. The last known American to be killed by a U.S. drone strike was Anwar al-Awlaki in 2011, an al-Qaeda recruiter based in Yemen. Senator Wyden did not object to this attack, as the government suspected al-Awlaki helped plan the failed so-called underwear bomber incident on Christmas Day 2009. That same attack also killed Samir Khan, who served as an inspiration for Mohammed Mohammed, the Somali-American who attempted to detonate a fertilizer bomb in Portland's Pioneer Courthouse Square in 2010. However, the three senators urged the Obama administration to adopt greater transparency.
This morning in Portland, veterans and their allies held a picket line and news conference opposing the renewed U.S. military intervention in Iraq. They gathered at Portland's Federal Building at Southwest 3rd and Madison and stood in the rain to deliver their message of peace. Organized by Veterans for Peace, Chapter 72, the speakers included veterans of various wars making connections among the current U.S. policies at home and abroad, past and present. KBOO's Jenka Soderberg spoke with Dan Shea, one of the organizers of the protest.
Dan, can you tell us a little bit about this morning's action?
Well, one of the things about the action was that on the national level, Veterans for Peace had a press conference in Washington, D.C., with IVAW, Military Families Speak Out.
IVAW is Iraq?
Veterans Against the War, and other peace groups, but it was organized by Veterans for Peace to come out and speak about the current conditions of the sort of the drumming for war to go back into Iraq. And we didn't have anything locally that we were doing. We've been working on a number of different projects, and I just thought, you know, we needed our voices to be heard, not just in Washington, D.C., but all across the country. And if each little chapter can do something in their local community, big or small, that's what we needed to do. And so we called it out.
President Obama has just allocated a huge amount of funds to fighting in Syria. And do you think that $500 million would be better spent as reparations to the people of Iraq for having suffered through the many years of U.S. occupation?
Well, yes, I think it would. Somebody asked me earlier today in another interview, you know, should we just ignore the people over there? It's not our fight, mind our own business. Well, you know, I mean, when it comes to military, yes, we shouldn't be intervening militarily. But that doesn't mean we should be ignoring the world. But we need to look at peaceful means of interaction. You don't kill your brothers and sisters. You get to know you know your brothers and sisters, and you share information. If we share knowledge, technology, wealth, whatever it might be that we can become friends and have cultural exchanges, then we don't make enemies. We make friends.
What do you think people should do at a local level to get involved in this effort to prevent this intervention in Iraq?
Well, almost anything. I mean, one thing is when you hear about an event that's on the street, be there and support the people in any way you can. The other is to, of course, call your Congress persons or senators and let them know. If they're against this, thank them. If they're promoting going back in, you know, give them a piece of your mind. Tell them you've had enough of war and that we need to support our veterans here. I think another thing, not just, you know, the waste of money, but we're wasting lives. We have veterans that are coming back. It's like 350,000 PTSD and almost similar amount of BTI, which is traumatic brain injury. You know, how many people have died? Like I said, 22 a day have committed suicide. You begin to see this culture of violence and total dysfunction of both our military and in our society, because it mimics that. And I think that what we have to do is begin to build a culture of peace.
Again, I've been speaking with Dan Shea. He is joining us today live in the studio and was a participant in a rally this morning, a picket against U.S. intervention in Iraq that was held at 11 a.m. this morning, Friday morning, outside of the federal building in downtown Portland amidst the rain. This is Jenka Soderberg with KBOO News.
Iraq's insurgent group ISIS has executed an estimated 1,700 Iraqi soldiers in the past month, according to the tabulations from satellite imagery and on-the-ground photographs broadcast on Al Jazeera and also cross-referenced by Human Rights Watch. As recently as 2 weeks ago, 190 people were believed to be seen executed at a monument next to Saddam Hussein's old water palace in Tikrit. Most Iraqi soldiers are being shown in the media to be surrendering quite readily and without confrontation to the ISIS insurgents. Police and soldiers, poorly armed in many cases, have abandoned their IDs and anything that could identify them as officials of the current regime, fearing for their lives and the lives of their loved ones. Web broadcasts of what appear to be insurgents attacking various enemies, and in some cases video of the mass executions, are regularly posted by ISIS, according to the Al Jazeera article. Prime Minister Nouri al-Maliki has held rallies to galvanize remaining soldiers and citizens to fight back against the insurgency, which wants to impose Sharia law in a country that includes the territories of Syria, Iraq, and Kurdistan. Over 500,000 people have fled the city of Mosul since the offensive, according to Human Rights Watch and Al Jazeera.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News. Stay tuned after this newscast for Counterspin, followed by Bread and Roses at 6. At 7, Hard Knock Radio, news, views, and hip-hop. Tomorrow's weather, showers with a high near 69. Sunday will be sunnier with a high of 72. In today's Radcast, the only citizen-led radiation count on the air, radiation levels for today are 31 counts per minute in North Portland, 29 counts per minute in Vancouver, Washington. Eugene, Oregon also has a count of 29 CPM. And North Vancouver, British Columbia has a radiation count of 35 counts per minute. Counts per minute is a measurement of ionizing radiation events registered by a Geiger counter. EPA alert levels start at 100 CPM. More information can be found at radcast.org. Today in 1950, the United States decided to send troops to enter the war in Korea. On this date in 1976, a plane from Tel Aviv to Paris was hijacked by the Palestinian Liberation Organization and rerouted to Entebbe, Uganda, leading to a hostage crisis that lasted for 8 days. The quote of the day comes from Helen Keller. She was born on this day in 1880. "Walking with a friend in the dark is better than walking alone in the light."
It's 5:17, time for the Daily Commentary from Jim Hightower.
The gabillionaire Koch brothers feel entitled to occupy the people's elections, barging in with sacks full of corporate cash. So, how would the brothers feel if people barged into their political affairs? To find out, a few citizens recently paid a visit to Koch Company's public sector, the grandiose name the brothers give to their Washington, D.C. lobbying headquarters. From there, a covey of high-dollar, coke-headed sapsucker lobbyists flits all around town trying to get lawmakers to take away our Social Security, Medicare, minimum wage, etc., while also making sure that the two free enterprise proselytizers keep getting their billion-dollar-a-year package of government subsidies. So, some commoners came calling on the Kochs. Okay, it was more than some, more like 600. They're affiliated with National People's Action, a scrappy grassroots network of farmers, workers, clergy, retirees, environmentalists, students, and just plain folks. The visitors occupied the grand lobby of the lobbyist building, forming a picture-perfect contrast between the powers that be and the powers that ought to be. First, a couple of ministers in the NPA group called on the Kochs to repent their narcissistic political push to pervert our democracy into their privatized plutocracy. Then, several of the out-of-towners gave personal testimony about the real-life impacts that the Koch's extremist ideological agenda is having. Patricia Fuller, for example, told of struggling to make it on Michigan's $7.40 an hour minimum wage, then asked why the billionaires would spend millions to knock it even lower. Or, as Charles Koch advocates, eliminating America's wage floor entirely. This is Jim Hightower saying, of course, the visitors were tossed out. But their point was made. It's time to toss these corporate oligarchs out of the people's business.
Hightower's commentaries are brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown, the monthly newsletter with Hightower's populist take on what the powers that be are up to. Find out more at hightowerlowdown.org.
In a surprisingly unanimous decision, the Supreme Court ruled Wednesday that police cannot search the cell phones of citizens they arrest without first obtaining a warrant. The court ruled in a unanimous decision that such searches violate the Fourth Amendment of the U.S. Constitution, which protects Americans from unreasonable searches. Chief Justice John Roberts wrote in the court's opinion that cell phone owners keep on their person a digital record of nearly every aspect of their lives. Roberts said the fact that these little computers are portable does not change the comprehensive nature of a search of these devices. Roberts also acknowledged that this ruling will have an impact on the ability of law enforcement to combat crime, but said privacy rights trump this concern. Senator Ron Wyden of Oregon praised the ruling. He said it's a huge win for individual privacy and that the Fourth Amendment still applies in the digital area, or rather in the digital era. Also, Chief Justice Roberts used some of the same data as in a brief filed by Portland attorney Bronson James. The Portland lawyer said he was shocked that the court gave his side everything it asked for. He now predicts 5 to 10 years of high court cases arising on questions related to this landmark case, such as whether a person can be forced to give up phone passwords and how long police can hold cell phones without seeking a warrant.
The U.S. Court of Appeals in the Second Circuit has reversed a tax evasion conviction against an accountant last week because the government had gathered data in the case from a portion of his hard drive files that were exempt from the original warrant used to seize his computer. The government seized the accountant's computer to examine data of some of his clients suspected of illegal activity. 1.5 years later, the government examined his personal data from the rest of the hard drive and built a case against him. This amounted to an unreasonable seizure, the appeals court said. The Fourth Amendment of the U.S. Constitution prevents the seizure of one thing under a warrant describing another, the court pointed out. These are called general warrants and are illegal under the Fourth Amendment. If the government could seize electronic records indefinitely for when it could later develop probable cause, every warrant would become, in essence, a general warrant, wrote Judge Denny Chin for the appeals court. Hannah Fokery of the Electronic Frontier Foundation said this decision might call into question the mass data collection practices of the National Security Agency. Fokery described the NSA practices as collect it all and sniff through it later.
Three major activist groups banded together to fly an airship today over the National Security Agency, the NSA's data center in Utah, to protest the NSA's mass surveillance program. The privacy group, Electronic Frontier Foundation, the constitution-defending group, the 10th Amendment Center, and the environmental group, Greenpeace, flew a 135-foot multicolored thermal airship over the data center in Utah. The blimp carried the message, "Illegal spying below," and plugged the website standagainstspying.org, which is grading members of Congress on what they've done or not done to rein in NSA surveillance. Greenpeace IT campaigner Gary Cook pointed out that Americans cannot protect their rights to clean air or clean water if the right of free association or the right to be free of unreasonable searches is under attack. The Electronic Frontier Foundation's Rainey Reitman said the public needs to join in the congressional debate around surveillance reform. The 10th Amendment Center's Michael Bolden declared that the right to privacy is a nonpartisan issue and that his center's new coalition with its two more liberal partners shows people can work across the political spectrum together for a common cause like privacy. Greenpeace and a broad coalition of grassroots organizations are co-plaintiffs in a lawsuit filed against the NSA for violation of the right of free association due to illegal collections of phone call records.
A Portland man has filed a lawsuit claiming that he was illegally fired because he has epilepsy. Seth Dahlberg was hired to work at the Eco Car Wash at Southeast 169th and Powell in June of 2013. A week into his new job, he suffered an epileptic seizure while he was on a break. He then told his employer about his epilepsy, saying that he had medication that had previously been able to control his seizures. When Dahlberg went to his doctor, he was advised not to work around moving vehicles for several weeks and received a note to that effect. Oregon law requires employers to make accommodations for employees affected by disabilities or other health issues. But Eco Car Wash refused to make such accommodation and fired Dahlberg rather than letting him take the requested time off. The worker then took his case to the Bureau of Labor and Industries, or BOLI, which gave him a right to sue letter. Dahlberg is suing his former employer for $150,000.
The mega tech firm Google has been building three massive data centers in the Dalles for the last year. Today, Oregon's Bureau of Labor and Industries, BOLI, announced that the firm constructing those buildings has violated the state's labor laws. The firm, LPR Construction Company of Loveland, Colorado, will pay around $20,000 in fines. Workers filed complaints that between December and April, they weren't given proper meal or rest periods. BOLI concluded that the firm infringed on the rights of 28 company employees. BOLI agreed to waive eight of the $20,000 owed if LPR Construction obeys. Google plans to spend over $1.2 billion on the three centers in the Dalles.
A new leak has been detected at America's only deep geological permanent nuclear waste dump. The Waste Isolation Pilot Project, known as WIPP or WIP, is located 26 miles east of Carlsbad, New Mexico. In early February, a barrel of nuclear waste from the Los Alamos Nuclear Weapons Lab heated up and exploded, releasing radiation throughout the facility and into the environment and atmosphere. Emergency air filters failed to capture at least 10% of the radiation released. Radiation levels dropped off after the February 14th incident, but spiked again this week. Officials are not sure why radiation levels rose, but the spike occurred at the same time filters in the emergency air system were being changed. The Department of Energy officials have been investigating the cause of the ruptured barrels and have spent the last 3 weeks at the Los Alamos Nuclear Lab. The nuclear dump was designed to last for 10,000 years without a radiation release. Officials now admit it will be at least 2016 before WIP reopens, if ever. A congressional subcommittee earlier this month approved $320 million for future operating and cleanup expenses for WIP.
Gardeners looking for bee-friendly plants for their gardens had better avoid big-box stores like Lowe's and Home Depot, according to a new study. Researchers at the Pesticide Research Institute have verified concerns that plants labeled as bee-friendly by big-name block stores are contaminated with pesticides that have been proven harmful to bees. Neonicotinoid pesticides were found in plants from Lowe's, Home Depot, and Walmart across Canada and the United States. The researchers found that more than half the plants tested contained these pesticides. Neonicotinoids have been found to kill or impair functioning of pollinators, including bees and butterflies, and have contributed to a worldwide decline in honeybees. In many cases, the whole colony may be wiped out by exposure to pesticide-laced plants. Some retailers have voluntarily agreed to limit or stop the sale of neonicotinoids. Garden activists are pushing several petitions and other actions to force the big-box stores to stop selling pesticide-laden garden plants, or at the very least, to remove the misleading label that labels these bee-killing plants as bee-friendly. Locally, several recent bee die-offs have caused some state legislators to consider introducing a ban on neonicotinoids in Oregon. A Eugene-based landscaping company has had their license suspended this week after using a pesticide toxic to bees at an apartment complex. The pesticide spraying led to the deaths of several hundred bees. This was the same pesticide used in the incident last year in Wilsonville, in which 50,000 bees were found dead. Eugene was named America's most bee-friendly city last year after city officials moved to ban the use of bee-killing pesticides on public land, but the ban does not apply to private property.
In the latest news from U.S.-occupied Afghanistan, around 10,000 protesters rallied in the streets of Kabul today supporting former presidential candidate Abdullah Abdullah. Mr. Abdullah lost the runoff election on June 14th to former finance minister Ashraf Ghani. Both sides estimate that Ghani, who is supported by current president Hamid Karzai, leads the count by around a million votes. But Mr. Abdullah denounced the results as fraudulent and called on the United Nations to intervene. Protesters shouted chants of death to Ashraf Ghani and death to Hamid Karzai as Mr. Abdullah rode on a truck throughout the crowd. They also railed against the election's chief election officer after Mr. Abdullah's campaign released recordings of this man discussing ways to rig the vote for Mr. Ghani. Ambassador James Dobbins, the U.S. Special Representative to Afghanistan and Pakistan, left Kabul today after trying to arbitrate the situation there, but the White House refused to comment on those talks. Afghanistan's Election Commission is set to release the preliminary results on Wednesday, with the new president's inauguration scheduled for August 2nd. You're listening to the KBOO Evening News. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call us with your breaking news stories at 503-231-8032. Our production team for tonight's newscast is Kristen Yaust, Don Zur, and Theo Burke. The producer is Ryan Katz. Our engineer is Ian Gadberry. The KBOO Evening News and Public Affairs Director is Jenka Soderberg. A podcast of local stories from this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews or look for us on Twitter at KBOO News. If you'd like to call your elected representatives about any issue you've heard on the news tonight, here are the phone numbers, so get a pen or something to write with. The local number for Senator Ron Wyden is 503-326-7525. The number for Senator Jeff Merkley is 503-326-3386. Oregon Governor Kitzhaber's number is 503-378-3111.